7 o'clock. Gary's just getting his coat off. Everybody get a chance to look at the minutes? I get a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Once in a while we have some changes. We have to do that. So, David, what is number three? You just welcoming them back? Or?
Well, just noting that the three commission members that were up for reappointment were all appointed by the council again last month. So, we've got our same complement of nine folks back. So, glad to have you. So. I might also interject here, for those who don't know, our new city manager, Dean Lauder, and might have the commission members just introduce themselves to Dean if they don't know. Just to... He needs to know about 10 more names here, I think.
There'll be a quiz.
Yeah. I'm Mark Nelson.
Hey, Mark.
Gene DeLong.
Gene.
Gary Stang.
Gary.
Hi.
Jim and Denny.
Jim and Denny.
Lisa and Linda are probably on their way, and John, right?
Yeah. And Bob.
John,
yeah, Bob Benke.
It's a little late.
Yeah, it's a little early.
Oh, I'm glad some things have stayed.
So we'll turn it back to you, David.
All right. For the Northwest Quadrant, you may recall that we issued a request for qualifications back in December. We put a deadline of late January on it. This was for the mixed-use area on the east side of Old Highway 8, about three blocks over there. We also sent out letters during that time just to make sure that we alerted the people that we had known before were in this area. You'll recall, for those of you that have been on the commission for a while, we had a number of inquiries back in 2003 when we were looking for housing developers back then. At that time, these folks from the Toll Development Company had responded and indicated some interest, but decided not to submit at that time. But we know they're in the business. We know that they're still active, and called them. They met with us a few weeks ago, and then responded. So we thought we'd have them in today to talk about it. This is Bob Cunningham and Gary Dreher, both principals with Toll Development Company, and guess I'll turn it over to them to kind of introduce their company and how they might approach this development.
First of all, thanks for having us here this morning. Just by way of introduction, and we'll keep this brief, Toll Development Company is now its 20th year of business. And Gary and I are the two development principals here in Minneapolis. We also have offices in Southern California and Milwaukee. And over the years, we've built a couple of hundred buildings, a pretty robust clip every year. We've been able to build new buildings every year of our existence. And one of the other things that we're very proud of is that we've never had a problem financially. We've never missed a mortgage payment. We've always been very financially responsible to the partners that we develop with, our banks, the communities. It's kind of interesting to see you here this morning. Our most recent adventure has been in St. Louis Park, where we're building Excelsior and Grand. And Gary and I also are the two principals in charge of that project as well. Excelsior and Grand, if you haven't seen it, is about 640 residential units and roughly 100,000 square feet of retail in a vertical mixed-use component. We've really, the other interesting thing, of course, is Kevin Locke now serves as community development director there. He wasn't there when we started. He was here. And so you've done a little bit of, I used the word earlier, cross-pollinization of St. Louis Park to New Brighton. And so that's our most recent project, and I think that might be the one that qualifies us to be sitting at this table and talking about the project here this morning. We brought along a copy for everybody of our the response that we presented for the request for qualifications, and appropriate now to just...
Sure.
Want to make sure nobody goes home empty-handed this morning. The last thing that I think that I just say very quickly by way of introduction is that our company history, we've done office, industrial, residential, and retail development without kind of any one of those particular product types being our favorite. We try to be responsive to the marketplace. So when there's a niche, we try to address that niche. When the market inevitably turns away from a niche, we try to stay away from that niche. That's one of the reasons why we've been able to be a 20-year-old development company that's never had any financial issues with any of our financial partners.
I think one other note, in addition to Excelsior and Graham, we do have a lot of experience in redevelopment. Bob undertook a project in Seattle called the Meridian, which was back in 1996, a large entertainment retail complex with Nike and Sega Gameworks and a movie theater. So really kind of redefined downtown Seattle from a retail standpoint. In addition, we partnered with the City of Bridgefield on the redevelopment of Meridian Crossings down at 494 and 35W. That's a 400,000 square foot office development that was done back in 1999 and 2000. So
that was the biggest building at that corner till Best Buy.
Yeah, and worked it. So we have a lot of experience in working with cities, and as Bob mentioned, from the standpoint of financial partners, we really view project such as this is partnering with the city to achieve a, you know, a common goal.
So you're listed as principals, so is that connote ownership, or is it a LLC or something? Or?
All real estate development companies seem to have a reasonably complicated structure. We're certainly one of them. We have an operating LLC that pays our employees. And then we set up each individual project as a separate LLC, but we're principals in both.
Mm-hmm. How many of you comprise the ownership of the company?
Is there seven?
Right now there's seven.
And how many employees do you have?
22.
And you're headquartered here?
Yes,
correct.
And how will this project compare to, you've compared it in nature, but in terms of size and duration, how would this potentially compare with what you've done?
Well, how about if we just throw a couple of comparisons out that are, you know, kind of familiar to everybody. We were selected by the City of St. Louis Park to be the redeveloper of Excelsior and Grand in summer of 2000. And in summer of 2007, right on schedule with our redevelopment agreement that we signed 7 years ago, we'll finish the last phase of Excelsior and Grand, which is the final 96 condominiums. So that's a $180 million project built out over a period of 7 years from selection through completion. And we started construction about 15 months after we were selected. Would have been a little sooner, but 9/11 happened in 2001, closed the financial markets, kept us away from breaking ground, but different story. But, you know, that's a four-phase, seven-building, seven-year duration project where we've maintained good relationship with the City of St. Louis Park throughout that entire time. As a matter of fact, when the time's right, we'd certainly invite you to talk to the mayor or the city manager or the fellow that you know reasonably well, I'm sure, Mr. Locke. So, you know, this thing, Excelsior and Grand, would be, I think, a reasonable comparison to New Brighton's project. The project that Gary mentioned, Meridian Crossings, let you talk about that. That was your project.
That was a two-phase, $54 million project that took us about 3.5 years from selection to completion. So that went fairly quickly. To a story office.
Now, in your role as developer, do you function also as a general contractor, or you hire a general contractor?
I was remiss in not mentioning in our introduction of what Toll Development Company is. We're only a developer. We're not integrated into any of the other specialties at all. Everybody, again, has their separate models. Our model is we like to go out and select a contractor, an architect, and the rest of the team members that's going to fit that project best. So we are only developers. We don't have A&E. We don't have any general contracting in-house. We do have construction expertise that represents us in the transaction with our general contractor so that we don't have to. But we don't have anything other than development in-house.
So
So in that process, do you, in a manner of speaking, build to suit a tenant, or do you use, is it a spec place, or maybe I'm showing how little I know about
well,
the business.
Well, that's all right. We generally, what if you're just simply a developer, as we are, it means that you're the first, you're the group that's in the risk position. So that's what that's the role that we take. Best analogy that I like to use is think of a deal as a wagon wheel. We're the hub, and everything that happens is a spoke to make this thing all work. So we go out and we find the project, the financing to put the project together, the architect that's going to be involved in designing that, and we help. We start with our own vision, and we make sure that our architects understand our visions. And then we hire the best general contractor for that particular type of project. There's a whole lot of developer general contractors out there that aren't very good at wood frame construction that so many apartments are these days, so we try to stay away from them. So we are the risk position. We're the responsible party to the city. We'd be the ones that would show up at all the city meetings. We'd be the ones that would be the liaison at any level of the city until we got building, and then of course our general contractor would be working with the buildings, the inspections group primarily. But does that answer your question?
Well, it's helpful, yeah. So as you coordinate the coming together of all the pieces, and then might it be said that overall you function as somewhat of a project manager?
Project manager and owner. So
And owner.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you still own property at Excelsior and Graham?
Yes. The condominiums, of course, we're selling, but the apartment buildings and the retail components we still own.
Is there kind of a term or a time of, and then you transition out, or do you just own?
I think our view generally on real estate is our goal is to own long term. You know, if we're going through the process, you know, our analysis indicates that maybe that's not the best path to take. For instance, at Meridian Crossings in Richfield, that was a pre-sale to an institutional investor, a pension fund. So we have great relationships in the financial community to do pre-sales, joint ventures, participating debt, whatever financial instrument we need to make it work. But again, our end goal is, our view is, if we look at it as, you know, we never want to look at a project as one that we don't want to own. You know, it's got to be good enough for us to own, to be involved with it. And then after that, we just find a way to make it work.
Who do you consider your competition?
Well, there's some very big developers out there that are vertically integrated, like Ryan and Opus, and we compete against them all the time. There's some smaller developers out there that are a little more like us that we also compete with all the time. So I guess the simple answer to that is everybody that calls themselves a developer is our competitor.
And we're very unique in the sense that we are involved in every product type. Opus and Ryan and others are very involved in all product types, but for instance, Ryan doesn't really embrace housing too much. Opus has over the last few years on the condo side. And I think, you know, that was a big reason in San Diego's part that we were selected was, you know, we understood what they were looking for. We understood that it was a challenge to make these uses work together, but, you know, we were willing to put the pieces together in a way that worked well.
What's your sense of timing with the market? When we have the property ready, is that going to fit good, do you think, to put your crystal ball?
Yeah, we've got to get that out and dust it off.
Yeah.
That's a really difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
And the other thing you can do by, as I said, we try to mitigate our financial risk. We have to take risk. That's what developers do, and that's what we get paid for ultimately. But to mitigate it is what we have to do to stay smart and stay solvent. And so one of the things that you can do to stay smart, stay solvent, mitigate risk is to phase a project like we did at Excelsior and Grand. There's no way we could have built 640 homes at one time and not have really made a huge mistake in the market, ended up holding this stuff for longer than we would have had we built it out like we did. So a phased approach is probably the way that you can start sooner and finish sooner.
when we started Excelsior and Grand, I mean, the apartment market, you know, had a 1% vacancy in that area, and, you know, the condo market was pretty much non-existent. I mean, this was 2000. And by the time we had our apartments up, you know, the apartment market was much softer. We had gone through 9/11, and there were issues, and the condo market was heating up. Well, we all know what has happened since then. So from the standpoint of timing, the cycles are definitely there. We all know them to be there. So as we look out at the timing that you're talking about on this project, you know, like Bob says, we need to get our crystal ball out, but one thing's for sure, the housing market won't be the same then as it is today.
I get the sense from your cover letter that you're interested in the entire project up there in the full Northwest Quadrant. Are you able to live with a portion of that?
Well, we wouldn't be developers if we didn't ask for both the office and the residential components that are on that quadrant, especially since we feel like we've got the expertise to address both of those niches. You know, we see the opportunity, we see the location. It's an excellent location. Everybody here at the table knows that. And we'd like to be in a position where we could market that whole quadrant. Would we live with a portion of that? I suppose, but we'd certainly like to try to make the case that we would be the best developer for the city of New Brighton for both of those components.
Other questions? David, anything to add?
Question. What have you done in Milwaukee?
Boy, all kinds of things. We have a business park that we started 20 years ago that got built out about 5 years ago in Brookfield. We've got retail in Delafield. We've got retail in Pewaukee. We've got office buildings in Pewaukee. Most of what we've done has been out in the western suburban area. And then from there, we've done retail in Vidal's Retail in Stevens Point. You know, literally dozens of buildings. And if you want specifics, I can certainly give you specifics.
I think there's actually a full project list in the book, if I'm not mistaken, of every project that we've completed. You're also welcome to view our website. It's very very interactive, and will give you a good feel for all of our product types and projects.
Is that listed in here?
I believe it is in the cover letters. If not, it's just told development company.
Okay. Thank you.
What are your, if any, concerns or anxieties or whatever about the project?
Okay.
Our challenges, major challenges, or however you might describe, our key events leading up to it, whether it's the city doing something, or, you know, all of the above.
Well, I'd have to say that, you know, from a redevelopment perspective, the city's doing all the right things from what we've seen in terms of getting the project under control, getting the environmental issues addressed. You know, that's a huge area. It's been, you know, one of the things that I always say about this when we're working with the city of St. Louis Park, whenever I'm out talking about Excelsior and Grand, is Excelsior and Grand wouldn't be there if it wasn't for heroic actions on the part of the city. And that meant that they stepped in, they started buying parcels of land, they partnered with us, they listened to what our concerns were, and we certainly listened to what their concerns were. From our perspective right now, it looks like the city of New Brighton is doing all of the same things. They're doing the right things to get this thing going. So hats off to you, even if we're not selected. I think it's going to be a great location. It'll be a great outcome for the city. We'd certainly like to be a part of it. We don't know yet. So that's another difficult question to ask beyond kind of saying that from what we see, it looks like you guys are doing everything right.
I have a question about, you mentioned environmental issues. Some of the other, you know, I think we have some unique environmental issues at our properties here, and you probably have a lot of experience with other areas. I mean, how does, are some of our environmental challenges compare or contrast with some of the other issues you might have worked with or other properties and developments?
I think that when you're talking about the word redevelopment, almost without fail, there's some sort of an environmental issue. Gary's project, Meridian Crossings, we had a soil contamination issue that was related to some dry cleaning enterprise that had been there before that was, you know, a groundwater issue that we had with the PCA. And Excelsior and Grand, we had naturally occurring methane where we had to incorporate methane vents into edge of a park and put some mitigation efforts into a building. Little archaeology issue here, a little something else there. It seems like it's always something with respect to environmental. You just need to go in with your eyes open and know what the rules are set by the MPCA.
Okay.
And I think then, you know, with the right amount of money, anything can be dealt with.
And it seems like the issues that you have are, you know, primarily located under the office buildings, which as Bob indicated, you know, those are, you know, not easily overcome, but they can be overcome from a perception standpoint with users. I mean, people were aware at Meridian Crossings that there was groundwater contamination and that we got a no-action letter from the MPCA, so that's fine. Housing's a different story, but again, I think based upon the work that you guys have done identifying this and where you've located the uses based upon your concept plan, I think you're taking the right approach and the issues can be overcome.
Okay. Just to summarize the process a little bit, we did a request for qualifications. The response from Told was basically, as you see, the work that they've done in the past, their qualifications to do this kind of work. Oftentimes the next step is a request for proposals, and we haven't got to that point yet. They haven't really sat down and put pencil to paper and figured out what they might want to build over there. Housing and mixed use is going to be some aspect of it, but we don't know if it's going to be, you know, upscale, downscale, ownership, rental, top and bottom, sideways, or anything else. So that would be a logical next step if council decides we want to work with Told, and then we'll get a little more detail, and I'm sure be talking to you in the next few months if we go that direction.
And the way I think that we could be successful together is to make that part of it a dialogue. So we'd want to spend a lot of time with staff understanding what the goals are, a lot more time than we've spent already, so that when we do put together a proposal, it addresses all of the needs that the city's looking for and all of the things that we can deliver.
Understanding that you'd prefer to have the whole Northwest Quadrant to work with, in the event that, when you make your proposal, will you be able to design it in such a way that it can be split in one way or another if there are other people that are interested in other portions of the project?
Good question. Again, we'd like to address it in such a fashion that we become a part of this project. We think that, you know, if we're going to be expending significant marketing dollars in New Brighton, we'd like them to be multidisciplinary. I'm really kind of dodging your question.
I understand what's happening.
And there may very well be parts of the project that carry more water, if you will, financially than others. So, I mean, we will look at that holistically as we look at the proposal.
Any other questions? Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Look
Good
forward
luck.
To working with you.
Good luck.
We look forward to being back. Good to see you again, everybody.
Thank you.
Mark. A couple more folks come. Do you want to? Should we do introductions again, or
how about just the new ones?
Just the new ones is fine too. But we could have done a test with you.
Well, I want to do a round robin.
But you already wrote it down, so no. So Bob, you know Dean?
Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Hi,
John. You know?
No, I'm John Koppel.
Hi, John.
Nice to meet you. And you are who?
Dean Lauder, new city manager.
Oh, hey. Nice to meet you.
Hey, who else here? Linda?
Hi, I'm Linda Harmon.
Hi, Linda.
That's fine.
I'm coming down.
All right. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Linda.
I'm Lisa Harold.
Hi, Lisa. Nice to meet you as well.
Should be coffee. This is water.
Yeah, you know everybody, right?
One of your first tasks, can you get the clocks on the right time? Yeah. 10 minutes fast.
No, it's not. We know this.
Yes,
it is. We moved it.
He's really
first thing
late.
This morning.
I struggled to get here on time.
You just slept late again.
Next time you're here for another meeting, sneak in here and change it back.
I'll get hurt.
And the gentleman on your right, this is a refresher. You are.
I'm building official James Wayman.
We traded him for Kevin Locke. So.
Well, that's what they were talking about.
That's how Toll knew me.
Oh.
So I had sat through numerous meetings. Basically, on a weekly basis, we called it the Meeting of the Minds, where they actually sat down with city staff. And as you said, city staff addressed what their vision was, and they put it together. We sat with architects. For the first 2 years, it was almost every week we'd sit down. And then after the project got up and going, it was every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks.
I'm sorry, who are you talking about?
With Toll, Bob.
Oh, you did? Okay.
That's how Bob knew me from my face in St. Louis Park when I was over there. So.
Okay.
I take it that's an endorsement of their work.
I don't know. I've had the opportunity to work with them. I know how he does work.
And how do you feel about it?
I didn't have no problem at all. I mean, they addressed our concerns well.
But remember, now they're the developer, and I would imagine a lot of what you were inspecting was with the contractor.
He was, but Bob always sat in the meeting, and if there was any issues or concerns with the contractor, architects, he brought everybody to the table. They sat at the table. And
so they're very involved, is what you're saying?
Very much good. Hands-on involved.
Thank you.
Just for my... here. Okay. We've got our housing developers, so this mixed use piece, is that what was supposed to be? I'm getting clouded by all of our people now.
Sure.
I know Ryan's looking at the office piece. I just want to keep my people straight here and know who wants to build what.
Who wants to build what?
Everybody wants to build everything.
Yeah, I know that. Everybody wants to do the whole thing.
Yeah. That's good.
We've got
enough people knocking the doors now, but
we've got time to increase the price of the one. Ryan responded to these four.
Negotiating for the twins now, too?
Okay, there's the A, B, C.
Ryan responded to these four parcels here, but before Ryan responded to those few parcels, we started talking with API, who isn't just a developer who's looking to go look for tenants, it's a real tenant that wants to be there, and we're still... as I mentioned in the report, we're very close to getting things finalized with them on a development agreement, which would start them under construction probably in April, which would be fabulous. We put out the request for qualifications for basically blocks D, E, and F. Now, they responded by saying, well, we'd also like to have A, B, and C, too. We didn't even ask anybody that wanted to do A, B, and C, but obviously they've done pure office development as well. So. We're having this is Toll, D, E, and F. Now, Mark Norvlich and Ryan is coming to the council tonight to talk to council about their interest in developing office product here, and they've taken a little bit more of a stab at what kind of development it might be than these guys have on their response. So, for what that's worth, at least there'll be something to consider with Ryan. But the Toll folks would be glad to be considered for that as well, if just that they were a little late on the response, if that matters. So.
And understanding what they do, would Toll be able to find tenants for A, B, and C? That's part of what they do as
it
well?
It is what they do.
They do, just like Ryan does.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could... A lot of this is salesmanship. Ryan wants to pitch that they are better connected because of their size than about anybody, and so they got people that are calling them, and they got stuff coming through their office that smaller guys may not have a chance to do, which may be the case. So it's all people business.
David, API, have they come back with two buildings like it was last time? And
yes.
Have they increased the square footage at all? Or were they?
They increased it to what we showed last time. It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed another month, but it was... about 10,000 on the northern part and another 50,000 or so on the main building.
David, on the east side, as related to the recent discoveries on environmental and geotechnical, My understanding is that those considerations are limited to the west side?
Yeah, it's a separate project. It's a separate area, okay. Separate concern.
So that being the case, is it feasible to proceed on the east side independent of what is occurring on the west side?
Well, technically and physically, it certainly is can be proceeded independently. I think, frankly, the financial challenges for the Northwest Quadrant are the whole Northwest Quadrant, and we only got one balance sheet, essentially, to look at the whole thing, and so any costs that are out of line on one side are going to affect the other side, at least in terms of when we can do it. For example, we might have challenges in, you know, doing a mass cleanup on the west side and a mass cleanup on the east side all at the same time. You know, just from a cash flow perspective, it might be better to kind of the thing that Bob was talking about of phasing some development and, you know, getting smaller areas cleaned up and smaller areas developed in a shorter period of time. But we haven't worked through those details at this point.
How does the timing work with the sale of the land versus what they'll actually build? Is there, like, covenants attached with the sale?
Definitely. Yeah, there's a development agreement that this isn't just a purchase contract where we sell them the land for a certain price and, you know, close on a certain date. This is you will build a project of this amount of square footage of this kind of type. Maybe it says what sort of valuation we placed on that development. If you don't meet the valuation because the county reduced your taxes, you're going to make up the difference. All these things, because they have to be tied to our ability to get the revenue off of that development that we need to pay back bonds and move forward. So it's about a 40-page agreement in some cases as to what has to happen on those parcels.
Probably why he was emphasizing, you know, we started this project and we delivered.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet.
But for example, Warren Ryan, for example, to do this outer portion here and in phases, would they acquire the entire amount of land on at the outset, or would they acquire it in increments as they proceeded?
Ryan,
I'm thinking sources and uses and cash flow here.
Developer's not going to acquire the land until it's clean, because they're not going to, because they're still out of the chain of title, because otherwise they get to be a responsible party.
Okay.
So they would, Ryan would want to enter, and we just had a conversation with Ryan for an hour and a half, well, several matters, but last week, two people from Ryan sat down with Grant and myself. By the way, Grant's a little late because he had to deal with his getting his daughter to daycare this morning, but he'll be here. Ryan would like basically an option on the whole thing for a long period of time with his list, with as much flexibility as possible. We may not be willing to grant them quite that. We'd like to see some performance standards. We probably want to give them some period of time that they could market a particular piece, get an appropriate developer, get a contract in place, and if they achieve that, then we might give them the chance for the second one. You know, there'd be that sort of a tension that we'd have to work out with them in terms of wanting to maintain some flexibility. Suppose Ryan is working on this one, doesn't get anybody for this one. We get somebody that comes in and says, I want to build a such and such. It looks terrific. We'd hate to be obligated to Ryan, who these folks maybe don't want to work with, and have to turn the big fish away because we're working with Ryan and they've tied it up. Or, you know, on the other hand, Ryan doesn't want to spend so much time and effort in working on a development here that they're only going to get a piece of it, you know. So it's those sort of things we have to work out. There's no promises or guarantees or anything at this point, but we know where they're coming from, and we have to work from there. They just on a side note, they do have what they feel is a prospect for this site. Obviously, if the city wants to enter into some sort of development with them, I'm sure they'll be mentioning that to the council tonight when they come in for a presentation at the work session.
Since we don't want to be hanging on to the land any longer than we have to, let's assume that we get it cleaned up in a reasonable amount of time so it's suitable for building. Couldn't we position this in such a way that let the two companies compete with themselves, each other, down the road as this progresses, so that if it gets to the point where they develop that north portion, that these remaining two slots under A and B are whoever gets there first.
It's possible. What happens, though, is that the companies have to spend a fair amount of time actually marketing particular sites, preparing the materials for that, presenting those things. And if there's any chance they're going to get aced out by another company that's also got the rights to the same site, they may be reluctant to do it's like a, you know, a real estate agent who has an exclusive listing versus one who just has an open listing and could be, you know, beat out by somebody else. You know, you're going to spend more time on the one you have control over. But that isn't to say that you couldn't do it that way. We'd love to keep the competition involved for a while rather than selecting one and having them have exclusive rights. But we just got to work it out.
Well, I'm thinking more on the line, I like your real estate analogy, on the line of a first right of refusal, you know, in the situation where the other party told, let's say, has somebody that's interested and ready to go, and Ryan doesn't fit with that, you know, you say to Ryan, you have a choice right here to either buy the property and control its development or let it go so that we can get it developed and not hold up our financing and everything else that goes with city ownership.
Again, the timing on the sale of the land is only part of it. We'd love to get the revenue from the sale of the land early, but we'd have to work out a contract with whoever we sell the land that says you're going to do this on the land. And if they're not ready to specify what sort of development would go on there, then we end up with, you know, amendments or changes later on. We'd really have to have all that tied together, I guess. And they'd have to have cleaned up land so they're not entitled when it's there. But, you know, it's possible we could get earlier closing on the land, but, you know, conditions have to be met. And,
I'd have to expect, too, that with the numbers Ryan has run in for that whole piece, it's probably like what we're looking at for the Northwest Quadrant. When it's all said and done, we hope to make the whole thing work. You know, some might go over, some might come under, but they might be approaching it the same way, knowing that that middle piece is the prime spot, and they can make the other two sides work if they have control of the whole thing and put somebody in there. So that seems fair.
Yeah. They're good questions. I mean, we were very early in the discussion with them and told us certainly some group that is capable. And we've been working with Ryan a little more in detail because they've been involved in a little more specific proposal. But on the other hand, there's we worked with Ryan a few years ago, and we understand Ryan a little bit better and have a little bit of wariness, I guess, too. So.
Where did you work with Ryan?
Ryan was the master developer for the Northwest Quadrant. Was selected by, recommended by this group, selected by council in 1999. And we worked with Ryan until 2002,
Rebecca
approximately, Yonish. Where a number of things conspired and suggested we just couldn't make it work. They wanted to work. The whole development was on a whole different plane at that point. We didn't have nearly the knowledge about engineering. We didn't have the plan. They brought in, actually, DSU at one time, and they do a plan somewhat similar to this that they put forward. They dealt with us on the engineering costs. They had a number of suggestions that really helped the development. Everyone paid for it, so it was good information from their perspective. But then when it came down to working out the timing of the project and the land prices and those sort of things, the office market post 9/11 had been softened and. You know, they wanted to have, you know, just to use an extreme example, 10 years to build one building. You know, it's just kind of hard to commit to somebody on that basis. But the market was a big part of it at that point, and we parted ways.
This fellow mentioned risk, and naturally that's part of the process of negotiating as to how that shakes out. But I continue to have to struggle with, on the one hand, what we're being told about this fabulous location that we have, and on the other hand, so few parties are actually interested. And as a consequence, I think inherently, it lessens our leverage as a city in negotiating these the terms and conditions. How do we reconcile that in terms of so few people are actually interested in developing? What does that tell us?
It's
inconsistent as far
as... Well, I'd be guessing. I mean, we're needing a certain type of development here, I guess would be my guess. This isn't going to be small office or industrial development parcels. If we had industrial land up here, we could sell it and we'd have any number of takers for it. The office market is still somewhat soft, and we're talking about fairly large office projects here. If we had sites for 20 to 40,000 square feet of office space or office warehouse space, I'm sure we could find a number of takers for that. These are big parcels. These are complicated developments in terms of the mixed use, and it certainly limits the number of developers that are going to be able to, you know, confidently respond to a request for those kind of sites here. That'd be my guess, and again, I'm just speculating. This is a good site, but it's got to have the right type of developer too.
So are our expectations not in sync with the market reality in terms of that location and who's interested in it?
Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't think the number of, you only need one, so I'm not suggesting that we need to have them lining up the door. Certainly it makes it easier to keep the pressure on developers when you've got a competitive situation. But on the other hand, at some point the council would have to select a developer for a site anyway, and then we have to trust that developer to go ahead and do a terrific job of marketing and finding the tenants. The key is the tenants for the office, and whoever finds them, it still comes down to whether they can find a user or users for those sites.
Let's move on to property acquisitions. Looks like we're getting closer on a couple, huh?
Yeah, we're still, we had a very good couple of meetings, I guess it was the developers that were primarily involved a couple weeks ago with the post office when they came to town. They're getting down to details as far as each of the projects and when they're what they have to do, when they have to do it, exact specific designs of the building. They had their architects. The Postal Service hires architects locally to design the improvements that are related to being a postal facility. The developers each have their own architects here, and so those are designing the site layout and the shell building, and so there's a coordination between two sets of architects that have to take place. And the Postal Service's in-house architect person was here, and you know, they got down to those kind of details, so we were glad to see that. It's been rather conceptual in the meantime. Separately, we're working on finalizing the terms of the agreement that we can go forward on, and the attorneys are involved now. We haven't done anything that's different from what the agreement was that was in your packet that was requested for this month. That was the packet that went to the Postal Service several months ago. So.
We don't own that land, then. Is that right?
Separately, we're working on the acquisition of the... We own the land... Well, we don't own the post office land in the Northwest Quadrant.
No, no, no. The one that you're building.
We own the land south of Dalco. The city owns that land. That was part of the former Gillis and Gibbs. Mm-hmm. Pratt Ordway owns the land in Main Street Village that would have the retail facility on that.
Okay.
He sold that separately to Pratt Ordway several years ago.
Right. So you're proposing to develop it on the city property, and are we going to retain ownership of that building?
Ryan Companies is interested in building on that site and would purchase the land and own the building. It would be a multi-tenant building.
There's two separate ownerships, John. There's the annex, which is down at the end, and then Pratt Ordway, the retail.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the retail aspect. I'm concerned about their major building and how it plays out with the whole financing of this project. When I compared what's going on for the cost of development and long-term lease information that I have, which has been fairly, I think it's been fairly minimal, I have a hard time seeing how the city's going to make that a profitable or even a break-even kind of situation. Is there a plan to do that? or are we looking at subsidizing this move to such an extent that we're going to be paying for it for a long time?
You're talking about the amount of money that the city's going to be obligated to pay the Postal Service and balancing that against the development. Is that what you're thinking?
Okay, we have to pay to get them out of this building.
Right.
And so we get that, we get their interest in their lease, don't we? They're going to assign their lease to us when we buy them out of that building.
If the building is owned by the city before the Postal Service is obligated to leave or is agreed to leave, then yes, we would take over the building and they would pay lease payments to us.
No. When we're still negotiating for the purchase of the post office, right?
The purchase of the building.
And the building.
Right.
And the building.
Right. Okay. So far, we don't own that.
Right.
All right. And there's a lease to the post office right now.
Yeah.
At some minimal rate.
Right.
Okay. When the post office moves out of that building, because they're going to be moving into our building,
mm-hmm.
That lease is going to be in effect for how many years?
We will almost certainly own that building before the post office moves out of there.
Okay, but right now.
So what's the question?
Well, the question is that long-term nature of that lease should go against the current value of the use of that building. How long is the term of their lease?
Because they have options to go for another 15 years.
And no extension options after that?
These are three more options that can be extended for up to 15 years. Three more five-year options.
Okay. So you've got basically this minimalistic rent payment that they're making now for the next 15 years. And basically, what does that do then in the reduction of the value of that land to the current owner of it?
Quite a bit. And we're asserting that in court. I mean, we're not paying for this thing twice. The postal, if the current owner, Zalixson, had a building that was empty, it would be worth more than if the same building has got a lease to the Postal Service for another 15 years at $1.90 a foot.
That's right.
And that's going to be reflected, I think, in the value, and it's going to be determined, and we're going to pay a reduced value for the fee interest in that building that that Zalixson holds.
Yeah, because you're essentially accelerating all of the lease payments that would have to be made at a present value.
Exactly.
And the next use of the reasonable use of that property for the next 15 years would be the value of the reduction on what he's asking for the property. Mm-hmm. Now you're moving the post office into a building that we own, that we will potentially that we'll own.
No. We will not own any buildings that we're being built.
Ordway will own the retail and Ryan
right.
will own the...
I'm not worried about the retail, but you're saying then that's going to be sold to Ryan then?
Yes.
And the Postal Service will pay lease payments, I would guess, then to those two entities for the building?
Yes.
Comparable to what they're doing now. They're a tenant.
Yes, they have a... They'll part of the process now is they're negotiating lease payments for each of those entities.
I mean,
these are the same leases that were offered a year ago, and so it's this isn't going to have a last minute change as far as the basic lease rate. But they have to get a lease negotiated as part of it because the post office will pay them market rate lease on each of those buildings.
All right, and we're going to be paying the difference between the low amount that they're paying for the current site and the new office
market rate, right?
For the full extent of their lease?
Well, you're asking where we're rolling that into, basically?
Yeah, I'm trying to see whether or not we're going to be getting it out. We're going to be making a major investment.
Right,
here.
And your question is, where does that go? Where do those dollars come into play?
Where do they come from?
Yeah.
And then where do they
go? There's three aspects of the agreement to the Postal Service that's in your packet. Number one is the physical cost of moving, pick up the stuff and move. Number two is the cost of building out the tenant improvements that are for the Postal Service. And number three is the differential on the lease.
Mm-hmm.
And because the exact amount wasn't known, that the range gets to be pretty high in terms of what could be charged back to the city. I don't think the city will have to pay that kind of money. Nevertheless, it's a substantial amount of money, up to $3.1 million. So how do we get the money out of that? Well, number one, maybe we don't. But think about what we get for that. You get a property in the Northwest Quadrant that couldn't be developed, that has got the post office on now, and will be developed to something else. That building will, that area just itself will have about $1 million of tax increment that comes from that area. Secondly, you could probably suggest that properties nearby aren't going to get the development as long as the old post office is sitting there. These guys aren't probably going to build just north of there if the post office is sitting there, because they don't want to be next to a crummy building. So you're probably going to get development nearby there that you wouldn't get otherwise. Can you quantify that? No, but you can probably kind of guess it. Number three, you get the new retail building, you get the values on that. Number four, you get the new annex building and the values on that. Those values are in TIF 26, and they would go to that district. They wouldn't come into our balance sheet for the Northwest Quadrant per se, though there's possible ways we could work with sharing the surplus values in TIF 26 with the Northwest Quadrant, but that's to be determined. But that's where, that's the return on investment per se. Is it going to add up after it's all said and done? Maybe not. Maybe not. But you do end up with a coherent development on the Northwest Quadrant that you couldn't otherwise. And, you know, I think at the point we're at now where we've made major investments, I don't think there's much choice but to go along with it. We can't work around it. So,
are you rolling that TIF district into the Northwest Quadrant then?
I'm not doing anything, and no decision's been made to do anything like that. It doesn't roll in per se.
You have to do it by resolution, as that.
No, it's not. It's way more than resolution. This is a state statute.
It's legislation. We have to do special legislation.
There's a possibility of using the surpluses for that to offset some of the negative in the Northwest Quadrant if we chose to do that for the benefit of the taxpayers. But that has to be fully considered and, of course, passed if we get that kind of special legislation.
Is that included in the $10 million that we're already rolling into
the pooling?
That would be an offset to deficit or possible deficits we have in the Northwest Quadrant. It would help to fill that gap.
Is it in that $10 million already?
Nothing. No, it's not in there now.
It can't be in there until legislation is enacted by the Capitol to allow us to do that. Nothing's in there from the District 26.
Okay. What's the status of the eminent domain? Where is that in the process?
Eminent domain.
With Zelixon. On the site. You've had
on
the
post office?
Yeah.
They have, the owners have said they will not object to public purpose. So I believe the commissioners are getting appointed so that the values can be determined. And
well, that part has not been done.
That's correct. Yeah.
Do they know about, is that like May or April?
I don't even recall anymore. We keep getting notices that, I mean, things are happening, but I'm not that up on the process, I guess.
So if things went really, really, really well, when would the post office move? When would they reopen?
End of this year.
End of this year?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's reasonable to think that we could get both buildings built this year. We've got a lot of work to do in the next 2 months, but it's not, I wouldn't expect they're going to be much before the end of the year, so I'd say the end of the year.
Well, my take on your comments about the post office and the elements, the relocation, the build-out, the incremental and rent, is that that in and of itself can be looked at in terms of whether there is a net balance in terms of the cash flow, but in the final analysis, it's really but a component of this larger project. So my question is, are those costs associated with the post office, be it the retail, the annex, or what have you, in the sources and uses of funds that we now have, that shows that we're lacking $5 million, or is that another piece? Is that
no? They're entirely in there.
Okay, good.
What's the benefit to the city? Well, that Ryan comes up as the owner of that building.
As opposed
Ryan
to
wouldn't build
as opposed to the city owning it, and then at the term of the
City is not a property owner. Yeah, the city is not a leasing manager. The city is not a developer. The city doesn't do things that very well.
I don't like being
they're
the property
taking
taxes either.
No,
it wouldn't be taxed either.
And it wouldn't be taxable. The toll development just talked about developer's risk. They take the developer's risk. So I don't think the city is probably of the mind to take on more risk, take on developer's risk. There's 20,000 square feet of office warehouse space for that annex building that would have to be leased out. I don't think the city is probably in the best position to be in touch with the market and leasing those things out, let alone negotiating, you know, those kind of things. So for a lot of reasons, developers develop, we assemble land and turn it over to developers.
Steve, I understand the city would have a preference of not owning land if they don't have to. But the city owns a lot of land and operates a lot of buildings. And I'm looking at trying to justify the $39 a square foot is what you'd be, is the lease rate, is that right?
It's too complicated to get into. It's not going to be, that's because you're amortizing the tenant improvements over a much shorter period of time than you are over, than you are the 15 years there. So the net rate for those early years could be as high as an equivalent of $39 a square foot. It wouldn't be for the whole time, and it would only be if the costs get to be a certain point, which I don't think they're going to be. But until that, the city's obligated to do what we have to in there. But still, there's a developer's risk and an owner's risk in terms of owning a building, and I don't think the city, it wouldn't be my suggestion that the city take on that sort of risk on top of all the risks that the city's taken on to do the development of the Northwest Quadrant. And we don't get the tax revenues off of there if the city owns the building. And so we end up hurting our revenue source. So I can't see any reason why the city would want to do that. And Ryan wouldn't be interested in developing it if they're not going to own it and get the potential profit out of owning and leasing a building over the next however many years.
Well, is the amount that you're going to sell the property to Ryan for going to include the amount that we're going to be paying as lease payments? As an income?
No, it has nothing to do with that. Ryan buys land at market rate. We've negotiated a deal with Ryan at a fair market rate for land. They don't care what our obligations are on the other side of the fence. We can't push all the costs over to Ryan. It's not their problem.
We have to keep the post office whole and whole move, right?
Yeah. Right. They have to
they
be
have
kept
to be
whole.
Indifferent. Yeah.
I think what you want to understand is the $39, John, that you're referring to, is not for the whole project. It's only for the portion that'll be on the Ordway site, the retail. It isn't for the annex cost. There's different costs associated with the different parts of the post office business.
Okay.
So it's a very minimal, like 1,900 square feet, I believe,
right,
is at the $39 a square foot.
Okay.
So it's not this huge, everything's at $39. Secondly, there are restrictions on its owning property in the tax increment district. There are issues federally that you can't just do. They're controlled by the government. That you can't do this. It's people above us, not us.
Well, so bottom line, the post office deal is a necessary cost of doing business in the Northwest Quadrant. Number one. Number two, the negotiations are going to be are intended to minimize the net cost to the city.
How big is this sinkhole we're talking about, though?
Pardon?
How big is the sinkhole we're talking about?
Well, they've got the worst-case scenario in the packet, the way I understand what I've heard. And Gene's question was it's included in the sources and uses statement.
Okay.
So something would still have to go terribly awry for that to go up, is what I heard him say.
We would pay that same amount, bottom line, whether they go here or they go in Arden Hills. Or it doesn't make any difference.
Well, we want them in New
Brunswick. We have to do that.
Oh, we want them here.
Yep. Yes.
Keep in mind, I mean, you look at the Northwest Quadrant, I mean, the cost of buying the land and cleaning up the land, I mean, every bit of that land has a different cost associated with it. I mean, I'd say we got the bowling alley for pretty cheap, and we don't have any cleanup down there. So that was a good deal. I think we got the dump for pretty cheap, but we got a lot of cleanup on there. I think we paid a lot for Midwest Asphalt, but it's the best property up there. Every property out there has a different aspect to it, and we can look at any one area and say, you know, this isn't such a good deal, but we can't make the argument just on the one project. We'd love to have this area be something we could take and say, well, let's just do the east and then the middle and then the west and then the north and then the south. but it's an integrated development. It doesn't separate well. You can't end up with high-quality development next to crummy old industrial buildings, which, you know, because nobody's going to build on that kind of thing. So it had to be done in a comprehensive way, and the city's proceeded for a lot of years to do that. And
I do want to tell you that in this packet, these different diagrams, as far as understanding what was going on, were put together really well, and I did enjoy reading them, even though the news wasn't so great. And then the letter on the post office did help clarify what the mayor said, as far as what part are we paying. You know, it's the Pratt Ord way, you know, the $39. So
it's a complicated time right now, and I look at our time now, which is after 8 o'clock, and we had 2.5 hours with the council a few weeks ago to talk about this whole muck thing. We're not going to condense that into 20 minutes, I don't think. But we can talk further. We can talk at a different meeting if people want.
David, I fully understand the development plans, and I'm in full agreement with them. I understand what the consequences are of moving the post office out and moving them into the other building. And I also understand this makes sense to sell the property to a developer that wants to develop it, and then basically you have property taxed and generate money for the city. It all sounds fine to me. But the question is, how come we haven't had this information in the past? I mean, we've asked for all of the environmental information, and it has not been brought to us. The lease information on the post office, I think that could have been developed a little sooner and given to us so that we can see that ahead of time. And then the shock statements that we get from some people don't have the impact because
well,
we know better.
It's hard to go back and explain what happened at the time. I attempted to do that in the attachment that's in the packet to explain how the process worked out. We're not in a position to be withholding information from anybody at any time. There's no reason to. There's no value in it. We need to have people understand this. This committee is great at looking through these issues. But I hope you can understand from the letter, I'm not going to go through every item, on how this information rolled out to us over about a 4 or 5 month period. We do not have any surprises on the environmental whatsoever. We did not have any surprises. We knew this stuff years ago. It's not true to say that we knew nothing. We have a lot more information now on the environmental. We have a lot more information on the geotechnical. That's a big difference. Some of that affected the environmental, but we have studied that land to the extent that anybody could have ever studied it, given the fact that Midwest Asphalt was on that land until December and operating a business and putting piles on top of things as many as 800,000 tons of material that you couldn't get under those things. So once Midwest Asphalt cooperated with us, we were able to get back on the land. Once they got their piles shrunk down, we were able to get on more of the land. Once the developers got involved in doing phase two after phase one, which took a lot of this summer, then they were able to go in and do geotechnical borings and find out a lot more information. Then we took that information and processed it into options for dealing with it, options for changing the development, and all these are working with the developers. This isn't the city staff sitting dreaming this stuff up over time. This is engineers from both sides, developers and staff working on this kind of thing. And then our financial advisors that are telling us how much the impact this might have on it. That information was just available a few weeks ago in a comprehensive manner. And then we can roll it out and say, all right, here's what could happen, and here's where it would go, and here's how much we're going to, you know, here's the financial impact on it. We didn't know this stuff until less than a week before the council meeting. In fact, the fact that a work session had been scheduled on the 17th hustled everybody up to get stuff for that work session. Otherwise, I think it could have been another several weeks before anybody worked on a more reasonable time frame to get that. But we already had the work session scheduled, and we're going to get there with a bit of bottom.
Okay, bottom line is that you guys put the information together as well as you could as the information became available. And, you know, that's what you're telling
me. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I understand. I mean, it just doesn't smell right to some extent. It doesn't feel right, but that's how it came to us. And we're glad to provide information as we find out about these things.
Well, I fully believe that and support it and respect it. And I think the challenge that we all have is not if we proceed, it's how we proceed. And hopefully there won't be any more notable
hurdles, if you will. So here we are. So let's get on with it. It's the way I feel about it. And let's figure out how to do it.
I'm just happy to finally know what's up there.
Frankly, I come back to about how everyone tells us how wonderful this site is, and on the other hand, how much it's costing us to get it ready to be developed. It seems to me, and I was asking about how soon the developers would acquire the land, if we are to believe what we're told, then the value of the land should be going up daily. And so I don't mean this flippantly, I just wonder if we're charging enough for the land as we get in with the developers. I realize that because our costs have gone up, it doesn't mean that their cost has to go up in terms of the per. But I would seriously consider that as to are we and I'm this is clearly intuition based only. I don't have any of the data that you have, but I would like to register that observation that as we scramble to find $5 million, that if we increase the price of the land by 10%, maybe we could cover half of that $5 million. Now that's a potentially irresponsible comment, but I register. it's a free market, and so if we do get some competition amongst the developers, and everyone keeps telling us how it's a world beater location, well then let's let them pay for it.
I would suggest that the city's staff is doing everything possible to minimize costs and to maximize revenues and to maximize the speed of the development all the way along. And I'm not saying that in a defensive way. We are doing that. That's our job, and it's critically important, especially when our margins get pretty slim here. Yes, the land values have gone up. They've gone up substantially. And yes, as we negotiate with Ryan and Told and everybody else, we are going to attempt to get every penny we can out of the land sales. One other thing to realize, in the office development particularly, the model for the office developments has been that in some cases we are charging zero for the land. And the reason for that is that we are requiring structured parking. And that structured parking cost is also going up. And we could be selling land to get the maximum value for the land, the maximum development potential, which benefits us more than the sale of the land.
Yeah.
But by putting a condition on that property that says you're going to build units of structured parking, which means you can build denser, you can build more development on the land than you could otherwise, rather than having acres of surface parking, the Medtronic model that we wrestled with for a few years ago.
Well, all the developers talk about partnering with us. Well, why don't we see if they can't partner with us in making up this $5 million deficit?
How much increase in valuation of the Northwest Quadrant do you need over 30 years to pay that off?
Oh, golly, I'd have to cycle that through. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's a lot of property taxes over 30. I would imagine it might not need a whole lot spread over the whole district.
It's not the price of the land. So
no, I mean the buildings.
The
increase in the...
Yeah.
Right.
Trying to get the value increased. I apologize for being late. There are provisions built into our development contract dealing with inflation costs in the land, and we can take a look at that. I don't know off the top of my head what those are, but I know that there were provisions in there that increased the value over time as part of the development contract, so we can look at that. That issue may already be addressed, so we can report back.
With the housing developers, as mentioned, there is a specific inflationary increase. So, as development gets stretched out, they want to take a little more time to build the condos. So it's fine; they're going to be paying more next year than they do this year.
Well, like everyone, I'm sure. I just feel very uncomfortable that if there's a $5 million deficit, it's wholly the city's problem. And so, let's do some pushing and shoving and leveraging and negotiating and see how much of a partner we have in the position.
It's not a $5 million.
Well, whatever.
It's $15 million.
Okay, well, you're ahead of me. But
yeah. We're taking $10 million of other taxes that we already collected and dropping it in there to drop the price down from $15 million to $5
million. Okay, I admit I don't know those details. Well, whatever. The concept remains the same that I'm suggesting.
What about Feral Gas? Still any action there, or is that just hopeless and we're going to end up with them staying?
Feral Gas, Grant and I and a lot of appraisers and people were over at the site last Friday afternoon walking around to do an appraisal. We're into an eminent domain process with Feral Gas. Their attorney was there. Their attorney is very cooperative, would like to work out something, and we would like to work out something. It's just very difficult to find a site for them. But we're into the process at this point that would give some certainty to that development. We need that site for ponding and then later for development of the of that area.
Do they need rail?
Doesn't sound like it.
We haven't determined that. They haven't communicated with us specifically one way or the other. They've said they do. They've said they not, and I don't know their current position. I think they take it without rail if they had to.
They told us on Friday that they only take about 20% of their shipments by rail. Most of it comes in by truck. So
they need heavy industrial zoning, and they need about 2 acres. And the combination of those things is a pretty difficult match, because heavy industrial is not real available, and if it is, it's usually 5 or 10 acres or more.
And how much is that going to cost? And what's the value of their current situation? Not, precisely, but ballpark.
I have to look. The appraisers are determining that right now. What are we talking? $700,000, something in that range.
I think that was our offer. Yeah,
$700,000 or $800,000, say.
That was the land and the relocation expense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other questions on the Northwest Quadrant?
Well, I did. In terms of this, these diagrams we have of the contamination, be it geotechnical or particularly environmental, as we all know, the land borders on the park, Ramsey County, and so the environmental issue doesn't stop at the fence.
You don't think it just kind of quits right there?
So does Ramsey County just, they're a non-factor in all of this in terms of responsibility and participation and that word again, partnering?
Yes. The PCA, we met with the PCA last week to talk about a number of issues, but particularly the new concept for the Northwest Quadrant. This is the former Ashland Oil Northwest Refinery Superfund site, and the question to the PCA was talking about the conditions for delisting this area here, avoiding any further public action on that area, avoiding any possible stigma of living somewhere near a refinery of a Superfund site. The PCA previously delisted the areas in the park. This area, as you can imagine, goes beyond the boundaries of the Northwest Quadrant. The PCA previously delisted those areas in the park. And they did so because of the opportunity for contamination, the possibility of contacting that contaminated soil was pretty minimal. There's not going to be any digging in the park. There's not going to be any basements put in the land over there. It's below the surface. It's down in the groundwater area. And the paths on the groundwater were established as not being a factor there either. So,
but doesn't it migrate? I think I remember this from 5+ years ago, that the migration of the contamination to south is a function of the aquifer or something. The point being that they're north of us. And so
the dirty land is contributing to our problem.
well, state the obvious.
The migration paths were part of the discussion, and there are borings that are being taken to assess where that is. It seems like most of the contamination here goes northeast over to Rush Lake. And their concern, which we don't think is...
It northeast?
Yes.
On the location of it.
The groundwater does.
Oh, it goes on to the
It goes over
park.
To Rush Lake.
Oh.
Well... For telling us, yeah.
So it's the opposite direction from what
their concern, which we don't feel is well founded.
Off site rate like that.
Well,
yeah. their concern, the PCA's concern, which we don't feel is well-founded, is that it's contaminating Long Lake. And but there's so many possible sources that would contaminate Long Lake, primarily TCAP. And there's more data has to be obtained to determine if there's any possibility that this particular site has caused any increased levels in Long Lake. But it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem consistent with what we've shown before. And it doesn't, even if some part of it did run south or towards the development, that's down in the groundwater, which is 8 to 10 feet below the ground level as it is now, and then there'd be built up another 8 to 10 feet. So, again, the opportunities for human interaction and contamination is negligible. So that's considered safe. You know, there will not be a total cleanup of this land, but what's left will be out of the way and not able to be a problem. So, and that's the standards that they insist on for residential, as you can imagine.
This was formerly owned by Ashland. How come are they off the hook? And why would that be?
They're off the hook because the PCA paid some for the cleanup, and the PCA let them get off in terms of the parkland, and they're off on ours because we're talking residential development, which, I mean, there's no ongoing, and I don't have this precisely maybe, but because there was no action against the landowner or the predecessor when Midwest Asphalt was there, I mean, this is just, it's only been only been accelerated because of our interest in the land and developing it for residential.
Different standard, right?
It's a different standard. It's clean enough for industrial land as it is now. And that was the standard that Ashland Oil was supposed to operate under.
I mean, you could put a building on top of that right now?
I believe so, just like Midwest has buildings on their land.
But there's some geotechnical issues in parts of the land that would need some.
Well, if you had a big industrial building here and you could put pilings on there, there's a number of things you could do without having to take up all the muck, but that doesn't work for residential very well.
Because of the cost?
Because of the costs of pilings versus the area of the building.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and how deep the pilings have to go. It's just you can't spread those costs over enough of a base on the top here, so we end up with a burden because of it being residential.
So basically you're saying that Ashland doesn't have to clean up their mess.
Nope. That's correct.
Well, they cleaned it up to one standard.
They did contribute some to cleaning up what they previously, right. And they are, I don't believe, under any kind of action by the PCA at this point.
But they cleaned up only the part that was on the north side of the rail?
I don't think they cleaned up the Midwest Asphalt property.
I think that's right.
I think it was the park property that they cleaned up and capped.
That's where that refinery was, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if their contamination is on this side of the line, and they haven't done anything to clean this up, why aren't they accountable, at least to the industrial level, on this side of the line?
Because the PCA let them off the hook.
But the PCA didn't have this piece of property as part of, you know, when they're letting them off the hook, they're going to identify specifically down to the foot which piece of property is accommodated by their no further action letter. If this property has been contaminated by their prior ownership of wherever that thing was, their liability still continues with whatever parcel that pollution plume goes to.
We've asked this question before. We've got the answers before. I'm sorry, I don't remember the details of that. I'll have the details of that by next month so we can be done with this once and for all. Ashland is not involved in this. We know that. We would love to have anybody involved in this instead of the city, but they're not involved, and I'll get the answers as to why that is. So.
Thank you. What about the other one, the solvent?
Trio.
Where's that in this pink?
Trio is about here. It's these collection of spots in this area here, and it's under certain certain other operations. I'm certain why the pattern is kind of strange there, but that's the Trio area.
Anything else? We move on to other developments. I was kidding Gene that we should get told to buy the land from KA up the top of the hill there. What do you think?
That'll work. They said they do retail, right? So
it could be their test project.
Do anything. No, we don't want to settle for
just a little bit.
Maybe that's part of the deal, their bid on the east side of the
Northwest.
No change with KA?
Not at this point. I talked to Mike Korsch a couple weeks ago, and or I guess just emailed him, and he said they're hoping for spring. So,
what do you say?
There's a joke here somewhere. I don't know if I want to go. Which spring, maybe?
Which spring, yeah.
Now, Dean knew all this before it came, right?
No. He didn't ask for that right question.
They told me there were no problems.
Is that what they told you?
Yeah. Well, we were talking about right here.
And you hadn't met all of us yet, either. Okay, B, any update on B?
No, we got the signed agreement back. It's in the process. They are on the hook. They're going to do it. And we're going to have something going out there in a couple months with any luck at all. We haven't had a lot of luck lately. But they found another tenant that will probably take the whole building. And if not the whole building, take all but I think 4 of the 5 bays, and they got a backup for the fifth one. So they're very optimistic about getting it underway in the spring.
Can I back up for a second? The Brighton Village, they're looking at LA Fitness as the main tenant, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, didn't I read in the paper that LA Fitness has just agreed to go into another community and open up a facility?
Northtown.
Yeah, Northtown. This is a real deal. It sounds like Northtown, they're opening up one, and
right.
I hope it's not too close to New Brighton to open the one up there, too. So it sounds like there's some action with LA Fitness, which is good. Yeah. So maybe it is a real deal. They just have to negotiate a contract. You can only hope.
Yeah, I agree.
I was just hoping Northtown isn't too close and New Brighton is out of the question then. You don't think so?
No.
I don't think so.
Okay. Sorry.
No, I think
all right, good question.
I think it does speak that they are in town and looking. So
they're aggressive.
They really want.
Yeah, it looks like it's a real possibility is that they can get it negotiated. But okay.
Since our last meeting, I noticed that the Sinclair station has removed all of their pumps.
Yeah, they just doing repairs.
They're just doing repairs.
Oh, is that all? Yeah. They just capped them or
he
what?
He made that decision. Did
he pull the tanks?
Well, you won't have to if you
They did pull the tanks.
They did pull the tanks.
They did pull the tanks, yeah.
On the north side.
When did that happen?
About a month. Well, shortly after our last meeting. So right around that time. Right
wow, I didn't see a hole in the ground.
Is there a new owner there now?
No.
Well, as of a few months ago, Mark Bingham bought the property from, and he was the operator there for several years. He bought the property.
So he did, so there is a new owner.
So we know that for a fact. We've seen
Yes, and I talked to Bingham just last week.
Because his repair business isn't paying for the interest on the loan. So I don't think so. There's something speculative about that.
He called me just to check on development next door, and I told him what I knew. It was interesting he even called.
See, he's calling us as opposed to your...
Maybe just his customers are asking, and he was saying that he's wondering what was going on.
What is going on?
Get relocated.
Well, Brighton Village.
Which
bank has got the paper?
And the restaurant there.
Oh, at Champs.
Champs. Any on there at all anymore?
I haven't heard anything.
Well, the latest I had, many visits there, is with the manager that they probably realize now they missed a brilliant opportunity last year to put that patio in, and supposedly they're planning on doing it this spring.
A patio.
The one that we approved a year ago,
okay,
before the sale went through to the Danny Hecker Group, before Steve Wagenheim sold off. So the figures that Wagenheim gave, the Hecker unit didn't quite match up once the smoking ban went and everything else, and the level went down like 25% drop in sales at Champs. So they realize now that
arguing with Carlos Anderson about picking up 50% of the cost to improve the site, put the smoking bar in and put the patio out. Probably was a bad deal for them as far as arguing. They should have just done it, because last year they figured they could have probably, the return on their investment would have been 100% last year just with the summer we had and summer and fall. They missed it.
Who owns that now?
That's owned by Denny Hecker's group that owns, five other champs in the metro area. Yeah. Denny Hecker's one of the four owners.
Okay.
Now, even home loans, right?
The same reliable sources that you have, what are they telling you about the Sinclair situation? You were chuckling when I commented about it being speculative. So what's the speculation?
Originally, when Sinclair sold it, it was, according to what my sources said, they told Bingham, if you buy it, you cannot sell it to either Carlos Anderson or to the city of Brighton. But I think once he owns it, he can sort of do that, unless there's some type of an agreement. Who knows if there's a covenant? I don't know. But that's a comment they said, yeah, he gave it, because that's what the supposedly he said. I'm not clear. Well, once he owns it, if there's no covenant, he's got, you know, a year to get out from underneath anything he agreed to.
Who knows? So what did he pay for it?
I have no idea.
That's not public information?
Sure.
You go out and look at the tax rolls.
Well, why don't we find out?
David, can you find out what he paid for?
That's
under the table type money.
Ask a realtor if you have to divulge that.
It's a public record, isn't it?
Denny, do they have to divulge what they paid?
Wouldn't that be?
It would be tax records.
Yeah,
it would be there.
Certificate of real estate value has to be filed.
When the certificate gets filed, which could be months.
Could be a lag.
Mortgage is filed.
Can you find out for us?
Sure.
Okay, why don't you do that?
Does somebody, anybody have a legal description on it?
We got an address.
I can get it for you upstairs if you come upstairs.
That's information we should have. What was it sold for?
Well, we're not predicting or suggesting doom for this guy. Let's just go on the record that we're not doing that.
We have a better chance of rolling it all together now than when Sinclair owned it, right?
Right. But I'm wondering, now this building that's being put in at Mars, is that you said one of the bays would be left open. Is that going to be an office bay, or is this a garage?
This is an office condominium project, and the only change they wanted us to make in our development agreement is that just this is an office project. I mean, it will be sold to either one user or two users, is my understanding. But it will be a sold building, not a leased building.
Okay. When you use the word bay, I just took it to mean
like a repair bay.
Right.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's nobody here from the chamber today. Anybody representing the chamber? We'll move on then. So we got item 7. It says year in review. Do you have a video for us of the year in review?
Yeah.
What do you got here?
DVD. We can
put it all on tape.
Slides of contamination and muck, to show for 10 minutes.
That'll be one of our field trips this spring when we find the coast.
Yeah. Back in the archives, I found that in the late 90s, up to the late 90s, the commission had done a year in review and kind of looked at the project and set some goals for the following year in terms of areas that the commission wanted to be involved in. Some of you might have been involved in that kind of a process, looked like at least until the mid or late 90s. We just thought it might be a good opportunity to just kind of step back here and just kind of see the basis on which the commission was established and what are we doing here. Went back to the city code and pulled up Division 4 here on Economic Development Commission. Now, the last date of the code that I had was 2001, but I think I don't think there were any changes in 2001. I think they go back before that, but I think it's kind of interesting to look at the duties and responsibilities, which I'm sure go back to the formation of the commission in the late 80s, early 90s. But if you look at number one, confer with and advise the city council, planning commission, staff, community development department, all matters concerning industrial and commercial development, marketing plans and strategies. Back again at number 5, industrial and commercial development. 6, industrial and commercial development. It's sort of morphed, I guess, hasn't it? I mean, we're spending most of our time talking about housing and of course, all the redevelopment activities of the city at this point, which I think is appropriate considering the you know, the size of the Northwest Quadrant and the fact that it's a mixed-use development, but it's a little different focus than the commission was given before. So, just for what it's worth.
Housing is, at first, a commercial development. When you have to sell it to somebody, to,
it's all about money.
Develop it. So we're in there.
We're in there.
Well, the words confer, advise, assist, et cetera, but down on 8, 10, 11, and 12, 8, 11, and 12, there's the word recommend, which has a little more meat to it, in my judgment. And maybe the purpose of the commission, the first item there, purpose, is to advise and make recommendations. Because otherwise, in my judgment, advise and assist and so forth is pretty fluffy. But I think that, in fact, that we've evolved as a, well, my opinion is that we've evolved as an EDC and are very much, shall we say, taking ownership of the evolution of projects. And I realize we're not elected and we're not delegated to specific authorities
today,
but associated with recommend, that I'd like to emphasize that in terms of what we do. And even to the extent that it would be appropriate from time to time for there to be a motion made and to formally make a recommendation. Maybe that was done and I was sleeping, but I can't remember that right now, and we do that very often.
We've done it on recommending eminent domain, I think, on the post office, and maybe Feral Gas as well.
Okay.
At least those two.
Mm. Okay. I don't remember.
We're choosing developers.
Yeah.
That, okay, absolutely.
Especially the Ryan one. When did you tell when we did Ryan?
Okay. Yes,
yeah.
yes. Okay.
One of the things that we kind of fall into a pattern on is just informing. There's so much to inform people of that happens in a month, but I think it would be useful for the council to get specific recommendations at times, and we should staff probably do a little better job of teeing those things up to have specific decisions to be made, and the EDC can be on record of supporting them or not.
So I would, I don't know the process, and this may go nowhere, but I would suggest that under purpose that we interject, shall be to advise and make recommendations to the city council. But I don't know how that works in terms of considering that.
Is that the charter?
Generally what you do in the staff report for council action, there's a little paragraph in there where David Graham will go over that the EDC recommended such and such.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on record.
So that would be reflective of what does occur if we did that our purpose was to make recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah, the minutes that are, as they are approved by the commission the following month, go to council the meeting, the next meeting, and are accepted into the record at that point. And so the council sees
those
minutes.
How could you read all
those
that? Well, what you do? And every commission besides. Oh, my goodness.
That's why I'm from my full-time job.
You know, if we're going to tinker with the wording in the code, do we want to insert the word redevelopment, or is the word development adequate?
I'm a little fuzzy on the process here. Mayor, maybe you could help me on this, but I think some of these things would point that maybe we need to take a look at those duties here, and the council would maybe be asked to consider some changes there. But I don't know if it's something we should entertain. Well,
just put it on. We'll put it on work session B. Yeah. In April, look at this.
Maybe we can develop a few ideas, staff can, before next meeting, and
just
how this might get a little more in line.
A year or anything like that?
Remember when we last changed all this was back mid-90s, right after Matt Fulton got here. And we combined some commissions and eliminated
96, 97,
so
we did that.
We did talk at council when we were making the appointments on the commissions that maybe this would be a good opportunity, new city manager, is let's take a look at this information that we have is what are the responsibilities of the commissions and things, and maybe a brief work session and or at our April work retreat. I might be able to do some stuff there, too.
Well, David, you had listed under the projects and initiatives at the March meeting, be prepared to offer your priorities for the coming year. So maybe not putting the horse before the cart. I mean, you guys might decide kind of what you need to be thinking about. But then we offer in March, you know, what we're thinking, and then that might...
That's a good idea, Linda, because
that might
then it could come to the
determine
April.
What this should say.
Right, because at our April retreat, we delayed that a little bit to let the team just kind of get a little used to and find his way around and
yeah,
city meetings
in.
And things,
yeah.
The neighborhood meetings. So I think it was independent center.
I think I wouldn't encourage anybody that has any comments about some part of the input, whatever input you may have to David.
Is there any possible threat that somebody may desire to disband this organization on account that they feel that, we, unlike the Planning Commission, we don't have direct, generally don't have direct citizen input. People don't come here and present their proposals.
That's a statutory body. The Planning Commission isn't.
It requires
votes. Well, I understand that, and that's what I'm saying.
There's no eliminate this.
And even if this is brought to their the attention of the council, it's not likely that we're going to see anybody that wants to consolidate our duties or responsibilities with any other organization. Yeah.
No, I mean, you're always going to get the naysayers and the disbelievers and the people that welcome the news of the muck and the geotechnical thing with jubilation about a way to go after them and continue the word. We got them. We told you this is a stupid project. Now look at what the people have done. You always get those people. You know what? You rise above it because they represent about 2 or 3% of the total citizenship. And the other 98 say, you got to fix it. Do what you have to do. Make it right. Let's go on. It's a way to move ahead in our community. And you're going to get those naysayers. They you could give them $5 million and they complain that it wasn't $5 million in one.
No, I understand.
So you just rise above that. Those people are going to exist no matter what you do. You can't do anything to pacify them. So we have to look at what's good for the community as a whole and make our decision based on that. And this group is very integral in doing that.
Okay.
As you look out long term, and nobody's looking at it as a little spot, because that's a big project. So you can't look at the little tip up there and say, that's going to cause the whole project to go down the dumps. It isn't. We just have to adjust. Make sure it's safe. And if it is contaminating, put in the TCE, which I know it isn't, but the trichloroethylene they found in Long Lake now, that we know that's coming from TCAP, because that's a contaminator in water.
Hopefully. Yeah, way back.
Hopefully this isn't it. But they're not willing to say that now. They don't want everybody going wild about, oh my God, it's going not only into Long Lake, it's going down Rice Creek and into the Mississippi. Who's contaminating what? So now they have to find out. And everybody, as soon as that we put out those figures at the 17th of January meeting, everybody just went wild and said, look what's happening here. God. And you really don't know those figures at $39 million. That was an estimate off the top of somebody's head and said, this is what it could cost. So everybody immediately assumes the worst-case scenario and jumps on board with that and clicks their heels and says, see, we told you so, and it isn't so. And Jim Casserly's figures, as he's done reports forever and ever on all of our TIF district, is always the worst case scenario. If this, the finance and everything is at the worst, this is all we will make. It's generally better. But he is afraid to go out and be aggressive. He wants to be very conservative on all of his estimates. Will the Northwest Quadrant, instead of being $180,000 a unit, will be $220,000? Probably. So if every unit goes up 10%, we shortfall that $5 million drops back. So everything has been conservatively addressed in Jim Casserly's proposals. So just be aware of that.
So the answer I hear is no, they're not out to abandon us.
No, good.
Or to fire us.
In the short, yeah.
They're not going to fire us.
Is that wishful thinking, John? Or?
I was there when
sleep
they.
In.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be an opportunity. I hadn't thought of it, but it occurred to me. No, I was looking more at the last consolidation that we had.
We were on the Human Rights Commission.
Right, and we became then part of the Public Service Commission. And I'm just wondering if there's any elements that will want to convert some of our responsibilities into a Planning Commission or some other group, an environmental group. Okay.
Actually, if you think about the role that we play here and the role of the Planning Commission are...
They're meshed.
They're contrary. It's our job to advocate for the development. It's their job to manage it.
We're kind of right brain and they're left brain.
Very good.
Linda.
I don't know if this is beneficial or not, but it might relate to kind of the things to focus on, but I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, one of the exercises you led us through was you just had everybody go around. It's like you had one dream or wish for the city. You know, is it related to development or change? What would that be? So I don't know if you remember that or you want to dig back.
I thought that was kind of interesting
as far as what came up.
It might be 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, it's about 2000, I think, was when we did that.
Okay, but I don't know if that's helpful for the council.
Well, that's an idea for next month, maybe, yeah.
Do a little brainstorming at our March meeting. And then, I think as Linda brought up, if you have some priorities or some ideas or some things, or how the governance of the EDC ought to be different, then we can relay those to the council.
I tell you one thing, if we can get all 9 people here at 7 o'clock in the morning, or pretty close thereafter, this is a pretty solid group here, and I respect you folks that are willing to get up and commit to this here. And stay for late, too.
Any other business?
Well, just the projects here, I mean, look them over. I think it's just kind of a summary and a little perspective on things. We don't have to walk through everything, but if you got any thoughts on that, we can roll that into next month as well.
And I do have a question, since you did have a business meeting last month where you
Business Council,
thank you.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask, because I know we don't have anybody from the chamber here, but did anybody attend the gala last Saturday night in this group? Because I know there's more. I was just curious. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
David, the last parcel holder in the development, you look at what we're looking at here. Look at what the Twin Stadium is.
Yeah.
The parcel is at $15 million. All of a sudden, it's worth $50 million now.
Yeah.
So when you hold the last piece, it's amazing what it's worth.
You know, I've thought about that a number of times. It's so instructive on what's going on here. Here you got a state priority, a legislatively backed thing, many, many years of forewarning on what's going on there. But you're still limited by... You can't do quick take because you can't have an unlimited value there. You can't control when you're going to get the land. You needed to wait for the statute. You need to wait for the bill to pass the legislature last session in order to set up the public body, in order to even make an offer on the property. And with all the stuff they had going on there, that's not working. It's a very cumbersome process, and I guess we're not alone in our misery to some extent, but and they haven't found and they haven't even got into the contamination over there yet.
No.
I mean that's going to be half the problem. So it's tricky stuff.
Just as a question, there was a meeting that was held by the city council at the Family Service Center concerning the findings.
Yeah.
I didn't get a notice of that of any kind. I don't know how that. Notice went out. For future reference, if you have something like that again, where we're talking about the materials that have gone before this group,
it was a council work session set up for the city council. Nobody in this commission got a notice for that meeting.
No, I'm just saying maybe you could have. I think the elements that you covered at that meeting are discussed frequently here.
Well, doesn't that go to the governance of the council and how they present
their
public
meetings? Yeah, I think that's what we need from the council. Is if they want to expand it to go beyond.
Well, when you go to the Family Service Center to hold your meeting, I think that you're rising above the normal
because
crowd.
There were more than 20 people at the meeting, we didn't have a room big enough. That was the whole reason.
And that was the people you planned on at the meeting, not
the
public.
It was
developers
were there.
Consultants.
Yeah.
Well, as many people.
These two gentlemen.
That
so
complain
is that
about
the,
public notices, you know, we don't know.
That's
that
on the webpage.
Who's going to be there and how significant
the working meeting?
And it's posted here.
Posted
over there.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's already a lot of information.
If you want to read the postings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the way the governance rules work, though, right?
Well, it could be. But, I mean, we're involved in what's going on in these. I mean, this was a major disclosure that was made.
Well, now we've talked about it today, and we've had some information in the meantime.
And very many of the decisions have already been made. So,
we wouldn't have been a party to decisions at their work
meeting.
You
know
what I mean?
No, but it would have been nice to hear.
Yes,
that's all I'm talking about is information.
I agree.
Now, isn't even almost every work session there's got something to do with what we're involved with, though? Isn't
lately?
So. And it's open to us.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Otherwise, welcome, Dean.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.